Welcome to another edition of the Middlers Podcast. This is Bill Alexander.
Hi, I'm Yusuf Mustan.
And we have a great guest this evening. We've got Rachel Glowacki from the Holy Yoga Foundation. And Rachel, welcome to the Middlers Podcast.
Hi, thank you. Thank you for having me.
So, Rachel, yoga is smack in the middle of what we're all about on this podcast, in that it is deep, has deep roots in South Asia. It originated in what is now India and the greater South Asia region. But it's well known that yoga is really a global phenomenon at this point. And as such, it's really of interest to us on this podcast. Tell us a little bit about the kind of yoga that you're involved with, and tell us about how you got involved, as well as just some personal facts about you.
Yeah, well, I actually have been in the fitness world since the year 2000, and I was step aerobics, kind of weight training, boot camp kind of girl, and then I found myself in a yoga class, and as a Christian, there was a lot of controversy at the time where I was encouraged by friends not to go to yoga because there's this conflict and it could be, you know, opening you up to spiritual things. And what I found for myself was every time I was on my mat in a yoga class, I was invited into a space of silence and breathing and meditating. And for me, my heart was meditating on God. And I thought to myself, I really wish that there was something out there that would bring and bridge the gap for me as a practitioner of a yoga lover. And so a friend of mine introduced me to Holy Yoga, which is completely authentic to the yoga practice with all the modalities of experiencing breath and meditation and posturing of the body. But then the component for me was connecting it to Christ and scripture and worship music. And so I just absolutely fell in love with yoga and, as a believer, a holy yoga, connecting it all together for me personally.
And how long has holy yoga been around?
Let's see, what year are we? 2000. I'm 2 years in. I think it's 2000 and I want to say 2004, yeah.
Interesting, okay. So yoga as a phenomenon is something that that I'm pretty familiar with, and I think Yusuf is as well. I'll make a quick observation. You know, yoga is thousands of years old, and yoga is traditionally, and I emphasize that word, traditionally inextricably linked to Hinduism. I mean, I think that's a historical fact. So as it's moved out into the world, it's become different things, and it's sort of been affected by the cultures that it has infused. That's really what this phenomenon is about. Is that right?
Yeah. You know, what's interesting that what they have found is that yoga dates to over 5,000 years old. So yeah, it's thousands and thousands of years old, but actually predates Hinduism as a religion. And what they found was archaeological sites in the Indus Valley of yoga postures, like stone carvings in yoga of people in yoga postures on stones. And so what's really neat is that even Hinduism itself, they would say that yoga is not a religion at all. It's the practice of mind and body control, and it is part of a religion. It can be part of Hinduism. It can be part of Buddhism, and I would just give credit to Hinduism as a religion of co-opting it into their practice, much like meditation or prayer or fasting, like many world religions do too. So that's what I think is so inviting, and when we discover is that yoga in itself is actually not a religion.
So, Rachel, I wanted to ask a little bit about, if we get to the essence of it, it sounds like there's a connection between movement and body and spirituality here, that there's a confluence of all three. So I'm wondering if Tai Chi or Qigong or other movement and body-oriented meditation practices have the same potential as yoga in terms of enhancing spirituality in the mind and the body?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I live in South Carolina, so I'm like smack in the middle of the Bible Belt. And there's actually a lot of schools for children for karate that are Christ-centered. So as far as like, you know, practices that have a spiritual component, they do. Absolutely potential to connect. I think it's all about wherever the mind is. So if your heart is for God and Jesus, you can turn anything into a prayerful expression, in my opinion.
And where does if the karate and the yoga and the movement, these are Eastern movements and Eastern
mm-hmm.
meditation techniques. So where does the discomfort come in from a Christian perspective, or some segments of the Christian faith?
Yeah, I would say exactly what Bill was saying earlier, is that it has heavy roots in Hinduism. And so the discomfort is, so if it's rooted in that, and the literature is such, like the philosophy, there's sutras, there's a whole belief system, there's fear that if you open yourself up into that, then it's distracting you from the Bible and Christ.
And I'm wondering if there have you experienced known of any people grounded in the Hindu faith who are uncomfortable with yoga being practiced within the Christian context?
I haven't experienced anyone who's actually, it's not Hindu, but I've experienced a lot of people here, I would say, even in the Western culture, who are yoga practitioners who find it very offensive that there is such a thing as holy yoga. Because the belief in yoga, some sects of yoga, would say that everything is one and everything is God. And so if you separate it and just call it Jesus, then that is being untrue to yoga. Like, I've had conversations with some people who find it very offensive that because what Christians do believe that Jesus is the way. So if you believe Jesus is the way, then what you're saying is that nothing else can be. But what I would say to that, and just one step further, would be that yoga is not a religion again. And so if the practice in itself is a practice of wherever you are in your heart and your mind, and it's about the intention of your heart, then whatever you believe, then you can experience this beautiful practice.
Hey, Rachel, let me expand on what we're talking about here. As I've done a little bit of research, you know, as listeners of the podcast know, I've lived in South Asia, and Yusuf originates from South Asia. So, you know, we have seen things on the ground there and have some connection. And I just keep my ears open, listening really closely to what's happening in that part of the world. And I think it was no more than a couple years ago that an imam of particular significance, I think it was in Malaysia, in Kuala Lumpur, said that anyone practicing yoga, because that's, you know, that's a very cosmopolitan city, a very, very really nice place, actually. Anyone that is a Muslim and also practicing yoga is, you know, toying with apostasy, right? And I think that phenomenon of people whose spiritual views are ultimate, and unqualified, be it one who follows, you know, the teachings of Muhammad or the revelation of Muhammad versus those of us who follow Jesus uniquely, it does cause a bit of a quandary. Can you say a little bit about what's happened here in the States? And I don't want to go spend too much time on the controversy side, but I think the Southern Baptist Convention and some other preachers have actually spoken out that this is a really important thing not to do, to be a Christian and to practice yoga. Can you just touch on that briefly?
Yeah, I mean, there is a lot of fear, I would say, surrounding the practice of yoga itself being called, actually, as far as demonic, and, you know, yoga exposing you to other gods. Because if you go, and it depends, like Western yoga, there's so much yoga that you go in there and you don't even, doesn't even mention anything of the roots of yoga or the philosophy or the beliefs. But then there are some teachers here who would say, you know, they're chanting the other gods, and then they invite you into that. And then as a believer, you know, we're supposed to, you know, have our eyes fixed on only one God. And, you know, what if you find yourself in a class and it seems good and it sounds okay, and then you start chanting to a Hindu God, and so you're opening yourself up. So as a Christian, I really want to be sensitive to even the controversy, because that's their belief, right? Like, that is where their heart is. They truly inside believe that it's wrong. And I would say, like, to that person, then it's wrong. You know, it's like eating meat to me, in my opinion. If eating meat to you is wrong, then, and it causes you discomfort, and it's not going to bring you closer to God in any way, and you have this conviction, then I would say, then don't eat it. But don't judge others for doing it either. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it certainly does.
You know, there are two parallels that I can think of, and I don't know if they're directly correlated, but this is what's ringing in my mind. So, for example, in the Muslim tradition, when string instruments, playing string instruments and certain kind of instruments outside of clapping and something called a duff, which is kind of a drum, music outside of that was shunned. In a lot of segments of Muslim society, whereas Sufi practitioners who are a particular, the mystic side of Islam, they embraced music from very early on. In fact, they have it incorporated in their rituals. But there was a segment that struggled a lot with instruments in general and music in general, saying that it was demonic. And then the other parallel I can think of is I was watching the movie Ray recently, the story of the
Ray
African,
Charles,
Ray Charles, the African American famous singer, and how he took gospel music and brought it mainstream. And that was originally seen as something that was demonic as well, as how can you take gospel music, something so sacred, and talk about love between a man and a woman. And it was kind of sacrilegious at the same time, trivializing the tradition of gospel music. And now, as we can tell, there's so much of gospel music and so much of mainstream music. So, you know, in my mind, I can see this tension and how bridges have been crossed in the past. And I'm wondering if there's a similar parallel here in this story.
Yeah, absolutely. What comes to mind is when I first started teaching holy yoga in Charleston, I was under an amazing priest, and he helped me go through all these like frequent asked questions. And one of the things that we talked about was, how is yoga any different than Christmas? Because Christmas was a paganistic holiday, and then Christmas was founded, and I don't know so much of the history, but what I do remember it was a celebration, and pagans would celebrate around nature.
It was a celebration of the sun god, I think.
Yeah, the sun god.
In Roman times, yeah.
And so what how Christmas came about is you know, was let's take a holiday, let's get a tree, let's celebrate, and, you know, basically redeem the celebrations and the festivities towards Christ. And so I find that so interesting because, you know, now it's I think, on the other extreme. It's a very commercial holiday here in the West. You don't need to really, it's not about, you know, it is celebrating Jesus, but it's also celebrating gifts and whatnot. But I think that parallel, you know, could apply as well.
That's a very interesting comparison, actually, pretty thought-provoking. So hey, let me put out an anecdote and I'll follow it with a question. So as I mentioned, I do yoga in a couple different settings here in Charlotte. One is with Sarah Henderson, a fantastic yoga teacher in Holy Yoga, and a good friend of yours, Rachel, and a good friend of mine, and really enjoy those classes very much. And then secondly, my wife and I very often go to a YMCA around the corner and take yoga there. And the context there is, I would describe it as very athletic, very, very intense from a physical perspective, more of a workout, sprinkled lightly with, I would say, Eastern spiritualism. Even some teachers have people chant Om in unison at the end of the class. We just kind of sit silently through that. But it's interesting to see it in both settings. And I'll give a quick anecdote. So my wife and I were in a yoga class in the YMCA the other night, and it led in with a new yoga teacher, and she said a brief sentence about, you know, silencing your body, clearing your mind, and feeling a connection to the spirit within. Somewhat neutral language, but felt a little bit Eastern in its style. And that was it. And then about halfway through the class, one of the women doing yoga sneezed. And just about half the class all at once said, "Bless you." And I started chuckling to myself and said, that's the cultural thing, right, is that we come in and we say that, you know, we're aspiring to be Eastern and yoga is this thing that is so unique and so different. But right in that setting, there was that very Western, almost medieval, right? I think the root of that is a medieval superstition in Europe. But just saying, bless you, just pointed out that cultures are commingled. And it kind of made me chuckle to myself as I was seeing that. So, Rachel, with that theme, one thing that is done in the whole yoga class that I attend is that spiritual teachings are linked to things called, I think the mudras is the right term. Am I getting that right, Yusuf and
yeah,
Rachel?
Yeah.
So the mudras are they're Sanskrit words that are linked to spiritual themes, but in the holy yoga setting, they become biblically referenced and so forth. Can you talk a little bit about not how the Eastern and Western philosophies are commingled, but how the Eastern framework becomes infused with traditionally Western spiritual ideas? If that question makes sense, if you could just say a little bit about how holy yoga approaches that.
Yeah, I think, you know, as a whole for holy yoga, it's being authentic to yoga as what it is, but also not compromising what we believe. And so a mudra in Sanskrit just means seal. So if you think about a seal on a letter, it's sealing that posture. And so your hands are just like your body. If you're doing a warrior one, is a posture of the body. And so with the hand, it's a posture of the hands. And so it's kind of mixing it in. So if you know, a huge posture in yoga is Anjali Mudra, which means prayer hand, like your hands are in prayer. And so we have, that's a traditional yoga posture with hands at heart center in prayer. And then in yoga, in holy yoga, or, you know, it's the same thing, hands at heart center in prayer. And, you know, the traditional posture you see probably on magazines or just out there, since, you know, yoga is really becoming almost mainstream now here in the West. Your pointer and your thumb are connected and the three fingers are splayed outward. You know, some teachers within holy yoga have create different meanings or intentions of what each finger might mean. Like some people, I don't know it by heart, but I have one of the lead teachers, she talks about this, and, you know, your pointer and your thumb is hearing the word of God, and then when you touch your middle finger, it's meditating, and then another finger is reading, another finger is praying, and so you have different meanings for each hand, but traditionally, it just means a seal, so you're just sealing a pose.
All right, thanks.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it certainly does.
Yeah, it does.
Okay.
Is it fair to, Rachel, describe this holy yoga enthusiasm as a movement? How would you characterize this?
Yeah, I would say it's a movement. I also would say it's a style of yoga. There are different styles of yoga. If you just look up yoga, you'll find Jiva Mukti. You'll find Iyengar. You'll find Bikram, which is hot yoga. You'll find Baptiste. You'll find Anusara. You'll find all of these different styles of yoga. And so what I would say as holy yoga, if you were just looking up what, you know, styles of yoga, holy yoga would be in that vein. So it would be, you know, practicing yoga or hatha yoga, which is kind of the umbrella for all most yoga, connecting it to Christ. So your intention, like you have your intention, you have your meditation. We know who we're meditating to. It's, you're not walking into a class and saying everything is God and whatever you focus on, and which I love those classes. I attend them. I believe that wherever I am, God is. If he's dwelling within you, then wherever you are, he is. And so that clear?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
That makes sense. And in terms of the representation in this holy yoga movement, do you have people of all denominations? And are there Catholics? Are there
no? It's all denominations.
Oh wow!
Mm-hmm. All denominations, and that's what the beauty is. You know, like the thing is, if you're following Christ, I mean, like we don't have all the answers. Like we don't. There's a mystery, right? There's a mystery, and we believe in faith, and faith comes from, you know, believing and not seeing. And the one thread that every holy yoga teacher has is that they love Jesus. And that's really all that you need. That's all that's required to authentically teach. Now, it's not what's required to step into a class. I have many students who aren't Christian that come to holy yoga just because they love the yoga and it makes them feel good. But yeah.
So
yeah, I was going to jump in to comment on that a little bit, and I would assume that it's pretty normative. But in most classes that Sarah Henderson leads here in Charlotte, in the lead-in, she gives a, you know, pretty gentle disclaimer that whatever you believe and wherever you are in your spiritual journey, and even if you're not a Christian, you're welcome here, right? So I think it's really important to be clear. We probably should have hit it earlier that there's no litmus test of who can be doing yoga in one of these classes, right?
Absolutely. It's for everybody. I mean, that's kind of the mission of Jesus. It's to love people. Like, for me, it's like not to convince, not to convert, not to change anyone. That's the job of the Holy Spirit that dwells within us. It's our job to love people and accept them where they are. The whole yoga practice is about non-judgment too, and loving people where they are. And so our hope as holy yoga teachers is to create a space for people just to come and to be on their mat and to experience the presence of God, and just create space for God, you know, making room for them to hear God. And really, we say less of us and more of God.
How about people who are clumsy and challenged from a flexibility perspective like me? Am I still welcome in something like that, or am I just going to embarrass myself?
No, you know, it's funny. I teach all levels. I mean, I have like 7-year-olds in my class to like 20-year-olds, and it's so great because you are where you are, and that's part of the practice. And I would say if that's what you are, then you need to be in yoga.
That's right. I need it more than anybody. That's right.
Yeah, you're perfect because then that's how you practice.
I remember once doing a downward dog pose. It was pretty painful for me, and so I'm wondering, you know, I should give it another shot. I do have another question without getting too much into theology, but I'm wondering, Rachel, if this point has come up for holy yoga. So for Hinduism, you know, a lot of people say that it's a polytheistic religion, but there are proponents who say it's monotheistic, essentially, and the different gods are actual characteristics of just one god. And I'm wondering if that point has come up for holy yoga at all, and that there's, you know, towards the conversation of more commonality than difference.
You know, I don't know, to be honest with you. I've had conversations before, like trying to understand Hinduism, and I've heard the same thing. Like, some say it's monotheistic, some say it's polytheistic, but I haven't had that discussion within holy yoga. Like, what's the difference regarding that?
You know, Yusuf and Rachel, toward that, I'm sorry, were you going to say something, Yusuf?
No, please, Bill, continue.
Well, you know, toward that end, it's interesting to refer back to another episode of the Midler's podcast, and somebody that Rachel knows, Chris Hale, right? Someone whose integration between East and West, between the greater South Asian environment, having grown up in Nepal and spent so much time in India, but now living back in North America and Canada at the moment. In some of his music, there's actually, I learned a little bit of Sanskrit and Hindi beyond it, and so I believe that Ishwar is one of the neutral terms, like Bhagwan, which is God, right? Sort of the roll-up term for God.
That's right.
Is that right? And
yeah,
then,
it is.
And then Mukta, I think he joined the two together, and it was Mukteshwar, which together, I believe, Yusuf, you can correct me, but I believe it was the God of risen life or the God of second life, which in a roundabout way was his way of saying, hey, there are terms that can be linked together that point back to Jesus here. That's not relativism or polytheism. It's just acknowledging that kernels of truth always point back to ultimate truth, which for Chris and for me and others is Jesus. So am I right what Mukteshwar means, Yusuf?
I am actually not sure of that one. I'm familiar obviously with the Bhagwan and Ishwar, but I'm not familiar with the term that you just used.
Got it, yeah. And he's got a song with that title that I really like on the album Sapna, which I'll make a quick plug for that great music with Aradhana.
I use it in all my classes.
Yeah, you and Sarah are big fans, as am I. Mm-hmm. So, Rachel, in closing, quick question for you. Have you been to South Asia?
I haven't. I would love to, but I haven't. So I'm speaking from a girl who lives in the West, who loves Jesus and honors this amazing practice.
Yeah, it's especially interesting to me and especially meaningful. When I lived over there in India, we met a young man who grew up in a neighborhood like ours in Hyderabad, a pretty nice setting, and spoke like an American, straight out, and liked his video games, wore his khaki shorts and his T-shirt. He had never been to America, and I was expecting, as had happened so many times, of asking a young Indian guy like that, hey, where are you from? And him saying Pittsburgh, but I moved back here 2 years ago because my dad's job or my mom's job. And this kid said, I'm from Hyderabad. And I said, no, I know we're all from Hyderabad, but where are you from? And he said, no, Hyderabad. I've never left India. And I got fascinated, but candidly kind of weirded out that can happen now. But the converse is true as well. Someone like you can feel the foundations of their life rewritten by South Asia and by practices that are thousands of years old, born in a culture very different from yours. So just in closing, just help us understand a little bit about how South Asia, in bleeding out into the rest of the world as is happening now, has kind of changed you as a person and even as a Christian.
That's a loaded question. Well, I would say first, so for me, how the practice has changed my life really. It is. I've never experienced God so audibly because I get so silent. And I think living in a culture where you are so busy and inundated by so many things, and you're invited into a space to get quiet, it allows you to hear. And so for me, it's with my mind more than my body. And I am a recovered eating disorder, and part of the yoga practice has helped me heal so much of the way I view myself. And I think that's a huge component with yoga. It helps you to practice mind control. And we see in scripture that God says, you know, focus on what is true and focus on what is lovely and focus on what is pure. And what I find is I grew up Catholic. I learned how to pray. I learned how to say prayers and I learned to pray. But I never learned how to meditate. And I think that's what the practice does here. And I think that's why it's so popular and yoga is becoming so mainstream, because people are so hungry to be quiet and to get still. And so with that, I think that as a Christian, I really hope and pray that more churches embrace learning, because I think it takes a lot of practice to learn how to meditate. And, you know, praying is lots of talking, right? Meditating is a lot of listening. And I think here in the West, we do a lot of talking. And what the East has done, being so embraced here with the culture, is that we're getting to learn to do a lot of listening.
Well, that's very meaningful. Thank you. Can you point the listeners to a website where they could learn more if they want to?
Yeah, absolutely. www.holyyoga.net. And there's a wealth of resources. There's from classes from all over the country and the world, and opportunities if people are inspired to become a teacher and bring it to their own area.
Well, Rachel, thank you so much for joining us on the Midler's Podcast. This was eye-opening, ear-opening, and heart-opening all at once, and I really appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you, Rachel.
Thank you so much.
I'm still dumbfounded by that last, your closing statement. It was just so thought-provoking. I really don't know what to say, but it really moved me. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. It's a pleasure.